bringing the party to you.
Samsonite. I was way off.
Hold on to your butts.
What's up, heroes, and welcome to the Stephen Corson Show, where we discuss financial strategies, habits, and mindset to get you to your first 100K and then get you to your first million, all in the pursuit of true wealth and modern freedom.
All right, I have my Twitter cohort buddy, Matt Vieira, with me, and really excited to be talking to him because we are actually getting him, ladies and gentlemen, right before he's about to head out on his mini retirement. Matt, are you excited about it?
Very much so. I leave on Sunday and I am so looking forward to it.
So you were tweeting about this, and me and Matt talked a couple of times. We met in this social media cohort thing that we were, taking a mastermind on. And so we follow each other and interact with each other. And you started talking about this mini retirement thing. And you just, the timing of it was hilarious because I literally had just posted, due to me and some friends that were arguing about what retirement really is nowadays, right? What is the essence of what, you know, millennials and Gen Z are going to consider retirement? Because I think we can all agree we're not that interested in work until we're 70 years old. And then, you know, hopefully you get a good 10 to 15 years of golf and bingo and you're done, right? So, you know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, what is a mini retirement? Like, how do you frame it up? How do you do it? What are some key steps if somebody wants to do a mini retirement, how they can get there? But before we get into that, I want to, you know, I'm interested to find out, like, what is it that you're doing right now? And then growing up, like, how did all these things kind of contribute to this mindset of, hey, I don't need to wait till I'm 70 to retire. I can do this in spurts while I'm young and healthy and can still travel. Like, tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up and then what you're doing now and how that all contributed to, you know, taking these mini micro retirements.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good question. So a lot to unpack in there, and I'll try not to be long winded. So please interrupt me if I do. I'm originally from New York City.
That would be the pot calling the kettle black, but I will do it. So.
All right, cool. I'm originally from New York City. I grew up, born and raised in the Bronx, New York. My family eventually moved into the suburbs of New Jersey, where I went to high school. I went to college for about a year and a half before I enlisted in the Army, in the U.S. Army. I was in the U.S. Army for 8 years. And I'll circle back into that because that's an area of my life which really developed my passion for traveling overall.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I left the Army and ended up in Miami, Florida, where I finished undergraduate and law school. And then upon, graduating from law school, I moved back to New York City. This was in 2008, right at the Great Recession. Yep. And I figured my odds of finding an entry-level attorney position would be better in New York City as opposed to South Florida. And I was right. You know, I eventually practiced law for 3 years. I was in litigation, handled a lot of cases in New York City courtrooms. But the thing with that was the amount of time that practicing attorneys usually work, 60 to 80 hours plus a week.
Right.
Great Recession at the time. While I was able, you know, I was fortunate enough to find jobs as an entry level attorney and develop my skills as a litigator. Benefits weren't great. Salary wasn't that great. And what was more important to me at the time, even though I spent a lot of money becoming a lawyer, you know, studying for the bar exam, was long-term benefits, you know, i.e. Retirement packages, health benefits, and vacation time. The last position that I had as an attorney, I think it was maybe I had a week of vacation a year. And it just wasn't enough for me. It just wasn't enough. So
talk to me about this real quick, because I graduated from college in 2008 as well. And I went into sales, and I had two friends that graduated from law school. And one of the things that really shocked me, it's like, you know, growing up, you always hear, oh yeah, you know, traditional ways to get rich, be a lawyer, be a doctor, be whatever, you know, one of these things. And it's like, that's not necessarily the case. You know, it turns out when you really dive into those professions that we traditionally would consider like, you know, the big wealth makers, it's like, it highly really depends on, number one, how good you are. And then number two, you know, your specialization. So, right. You know, talk to me a little bit about in general, just so people understand where you're coming from. So they're not like, oh, well, you were an attorney, you were rolling in it, you know, kind of a thing. And then they kind of disqualify this conversation. Give me some numbers. Like, what were you making coming out of law school as an attorney? Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good question. Going back, I would say I was in the $50,000 to $60,000 a year range when I actually left practice.
Okay,
which isn't a lot. Now, I will say I qualify.
That's a very average salary considering you went to school for an extra 3 years for law school.
Exactly right. Graduated with
3 years to make the average salary. Now, granted, you have a lot more upside, but it's like at the time you're really not doing particularly well compared to the rest of the country.
Right, exactly. On top of that, you're looking at over $200,000 in student loans. I think I was 220 at the peak, and working to pay those down.
Much as my wife. She was at 265.
Oh gosh, man, I can't even imagine.
She went to PA school. So again, similar situation as you, an extra 3 years, and coming out, right, she was making a little bit more. I think she started off around 80, but I mean, still, that's a high, debt to income ratio.
Sure, sure, and cost of living in New York City was challenging.
That's not cheap.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't, it was significantly cheaper then than it is now.
Right.
But coming out and struggling with those student loans, it definitely wasn't easy. It was definitely a challenge. Now there are attorneys who come out, make a lot of money. I mean, you're talking north of $150,000 a year plus, depending on where you graduated from law school, like you said, your specialty, et cetera. And, in retrospect, looking back, if I had stuck with it, if I was patient, not to say that I was impatient, but I was looking more towards a long-term horizon. I'm sure I would have, made that, commanded that type of salary at the time. But for me, what was important was I needed more benefits. I needed more of a work-life balance. And that's what I did. So I ended up leaving.
How old were you when this was happening? And was this post-military?
This was post-military, yeah. Okay. I was 10 years older than the average law school student. I graduated from law school 2008. I was 36 at the time. So
okay. So you did, yeah. What did you do? Two tours of service?
I did one. Well, I was in a total of 8 years, and I re-enlisted three times. So okay. Every time I re-enlisted was 2 years at a time. I think maybe 1 3-year enlistment before my final contract came up. And then I decided I was going to, pursue educational endeavors. Hmm. And then living in Miami, I mean, it was just, living in Miami one is just a lot of fun. I mean, a lot of people just go there for vacation. But to go there and go there as an undergraduate, and I was working at the time as a computer network engineer, and then decided to go to law school, based on a friend's, a friend of a friend's recommendation that I should try it out. And I did it. And it was, even though I'm not practicing now, going to law school was one of the best experiences of my life. I mean, I'm privileged to call a lot of the people I went to law school with friends.
That's great.
So part of my network. I would say in about mid-August, a few of us are going to get together. If I had to do it all over again, I would totally do it all over again. It just made me a better person overall in so many different ways.
So let me ask you this real quick. This is one thing that I talk about is my program is called the True Wealth Experience. Right. And the true wealth is the balance of the four types of wealth, which is time, health, financial, and social. And a big part of social wealth is your network. And that can be your personal network, but it can also be your professional network. When you say that, hey, I paid $220,000 for this, law degree and all this other stuff, but it was so worth it. I would do it again because of these relationships I came out with. Are you saying that just because it's like, man, I just found some friendships that I'll carry with me for the rest of my life, which is absolutely worth something? Or are you also saying it from the capacity of like, there are going to be or already have been professional endeavors where these people have helped me out or have been part of what I'm doing or whatever the case is? What's making those relationships worth that price tag?
That's a really good question. One that I haven't thought of. I would say, just one that these are just generally overall, just good people to know. You know what I mean? People that I've come in contact with that I probably would not have crossed paths with had I not gone to law school. However, if I ever decided to get back into practicing full time or part time or whatever the case may be. It's a network that I can tap into as well for ideas.
Okay.
And I feel like they, you know, I wouldn't hesitate to go to any one of them. And I don't believe that any one of them would hesitate to help me out in any way that they can professionally, you know, with respect to advice or point to me in the right direction or introducing me to people within their network, within their professional network as well. So
that is such a, I love that answer so much, because a lot of times when I'm trying to sell people in my, I have a program, my second level program is called Momentum, and that is about wealth building activities. And in there, I specifically have a couple sections that are about how to network intentionally and how to build your professional network out. And one of the things I tell people in there is I'm like, listen, building a professional network, it's kind of like TV commercials. It's going to get out there, and you don't really know how it's going to help you. You just know it's going to help you somehow, right? And it's like, otherwise nobody would do TV ads. But the professional network, what you just said, it's exactly that. I have people that I maintain in my professional network. I don't know if I'm ever going to do business with them directly. I don't know if I'm ever going to, you know, ask them for anything ever again. But I know that they're good people. I know they're hard workers. I know they'll probably continue to rise in the ranks wherever they are. And at minimum, I value their perspective. It's like, that's enough of a justification for me to every 3 months, take some time out on my calendar, block out 30 minutes. And I just have a list of people, you know, that are in my professional, you know, world or used to be in my professional world. And I just drop them a text and I just say, hey man, how's it going? You know, hey, I just saw you got promoted. Hey, whatever, you know, just saw this. How's your fourth quarter going? And literally, I'm not asking for anything. I'm just checking in. It's a quick conversation. We stay in touch. I'm just saying hello. And they remember that. And it's funny how future years, when you have no idea how somebody may be able to potentially help you, how that will make a difference. So I love that answer that you gave. It's exactly the justification that I think that people need to keep in mind when they're not just building, but maintaining a professional network.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, so, yeah. So please continue. So you're going through, you're 36, you've graduated. You know, you've got the law degree now. So kind of fill in the gaps, you know, give me some more of like what shaped your mentality around the idea of just living this contrarian life and not waiting till you're 70 to retire and, you know, taking many retirements along the way.
Yeah, sure. So when I decided to transition out of practice in law, I became a New York City public high school teacher, and I was in the classroom for 5 years. One of the, you know, benefits working for the New York City Department of Education. I mean, you know, it's an old fashioned job and an old fashioned pension, and there's a ton of benefits.
Absolutely.
You know, let me preface this by saying I would say, with the exception of practicing law, my entire professional career has been about public service, period. And
starting to see that trend. Absolutely.
Right. And going back to work for the city was another way for me to serve the public as well as get back to the community I grew up in. Of course, one of the benefits of being a teacher is having summers off.
Very true.
Right. So now we can circle back to that. But, you know, so I was in the classroom for 5 years and I was able to leverage my knowledge, skills and experience as an attorney to a legal administrative position now. So I'm no longer in the classroom, work in an office. I do legal compliance for the city. And I still, excuse me, I'm still able to maintain having summers off on my schedule, which is a huge, it's a huge plus for me. You know, so when some
you
people
took that position, did you have that in mind or did you take the position and you're like, oh, I'm not in the classroom, but this is a nice perk?
Good question. I think I probably would have taken the position even if I didn't have summers off, because there still is a lot of time off with, you know, holidays or, you know, the Easter break, the, you know, December break, the Christmas holidays. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having the summers off was definitely still a perk. And, you know, I think at this point, I don't think I would transition to a position, even though I have plenty of opportunities to within the organization, if I didn't have summers off, because that time off is really, really important to me. You know, a lot of people job hop for money, you know, shifting from one job to another, increasing their pay by 20%. For me, I mean, I'm able to, I would say that I'm better than the average person when it comes to personal finance and okay. control of my finances. What's super important to me is just having time off, because life is entirely too short.
Okay. So that is a very interesting point. Okay. That you're making there. I want to dive in on that a little bit, because
sure.
basically what you're saying is that, hey, money's great, you know, but what I value more than that is time wealth. And I would argue that is probably the most that's the wealth that most people think about and do almost nothing about, in my personal opinion. I think that we accept how busy we get in our everyday lives just as, well, that's the way it is, you know, because we've never stopped to think that, well, maybe we don't have to like do more all the time and constantly say, and this and that and tack on, and we can actually start freeing up space for ourselves. So this is really interesting. The fact that you right out the gate are like, listen, money's great. I'm saving for my retirement. I've got, you know, I'm doing all the public service stuff. The benefits are going to take care of themselves over the long term. But in the short term, I'm purposefully taking jobs that are going to pay me less than if I was to get back into like corporate law or something like that, because I want the time freedom. Why do you, so give me a little bit of a picture about you now. Like, how old are you right now? Do you have a family, wife, kids, partner, anything like that? And, you know, why do you care so much about this?
Right. I am, I'm 51 years old. I do not have a family. I do have a girlfriend. She and I have been together for over 10 years. All right. Okay. She's a teacher as well. She has a passion for travel, just like I do. It was one of the first things that, you know, we discovered about each other and what we love about each other. Mm. Again, I mean, just going back to the, you know, time wealth is, as you put it, I mean, there's nothing better than that. I mean, you know, I'm going on my 12th summer off, and it never gets old. You know what I mean? It's a period of time where I don't have anything to worry about. I don't have to worry about meetings, emails, phone calls, you know, whatever professional 9-to-5 career throws at you. It's these 2 months off where I can just live. Wake up without an alarm clock, do whatever I want, let my days develop organically. You know, eventually it's going to end, and it always ends sooner than I like. But I mean, it's invaluable. I mean, you know, there's no amount of money on the face of the planet that's going to buy you 1 second of time. You know what I mean? So you might as well make the most of it, you know?
I'm getting all hot and bothered here. That was straight sexy, what he just said, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing better than time. I love it. We do not get enough people talking about that. So, right. So that's great. So wrap up a little bit, again, just your mindsets around it. You know, I love everything that you did. Anything last second that you want to say on that? And then I want to hear your perspective on some functional things that it's like, this is how I plan for it. Because
sure.
Teachers don't make a lot of money, right? Like, right. I mean, to take these mini retirements, you've got great benefits. The long term is going to be taken care of for you, and that's great. But it's like in the short term, it's like you still have to intentionally plan on that. And right. with all this time off that you get, like you mentioned with summer and, you know, Christmas break and whatever the cases that teachers get. And this is exactly why we should pay teachers less, because they don't work that much. I'm kidding. I have so many teacher friends. I had to say that. They're going to get so mad at me because I said that.
You're going to start a riot,
man. Oh my God. The riot is going to come. I had to plug it in. I love you guys. I love my teachers. You should all get paid way more. Sorry, guys.
Agreed. As much as it's curious.
Oh, across the board everywhere. Right. It's just, yeah, we won't even get into it. That's another thing, but absolutely should be paid more. But anyway, I just had to throw that one in for all my teacher friends. But no, so it's like, again, you're not, you know, rolling around in cash. You're not, you know, pulling in $150,000 a year. You're still living in a high cost of living area. So it's like, you probably just don't have a ton of money that's just lying around. You probably have to intentionally plan for this. So walk me through a little bit of like, what are some of the functional steps? You're leaving next week. What have you done in the past month or year or whatever to prepare for this 2 month blissful mini vacation or mini retirement that you have.
All right, so first, a mini retirement, what is it? I mean, it's just basically an extended vacation. Okay, I first came across the concept of the mini retirement by reading Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek.
Yep, it's and a great you, one.
Yeah, and I highly recommend it. It really changed my mindset around a lot of things. Okay. Now, when my girlfriend and I first started dating, you know, we had a lot of time off. We both have a passion for travel, and we did travel. However, when we did travel, it was like a week here, visiting family, visiting in-laws, going to an all-inclusive resort, going to a hotel in Mexico. Typical vacation stuff that you, me, anybody else, you know, would do traditionally. That's a traditional vacation.
So I'm going to put your feet to the fire.
Sure.
And I'm going to make you draw a line in the sand. When does a vacation, what duration of time does it take for a vacation to become a mini retirement?
I would say a month. I would say at least a month. Okay. However, and here's the other thing though. Here's the other thing with respect to the difference between a vacation and a mini retirement, at least in my opinion. Vacations, typically, you know, you're off for a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, or whatever the case may be. And people tend to pack an agenda on a vacation, visit as many things as possible, do as many things as possible, see as many people as possible, whatever the case may be. So much so that when they're done with the vacation, they get back home. They need a day or two just to transition from vacation mode to work mode.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
Right. Because they're tired. And it's, you know, it certainly happened to me. Now, in the 4-hour work week, Tim Ferriss's concept was more along the lines of going somewhere for 1 to 6 months. So I would say a good baseline would be 1 month. And of course, you know, it's completely understandable that a lot of people don't have that time off to take a month off straight from work. So I would encourage people to just take as much time as they can and do something completely different. Don't go to Disney World. Don't visit the in-laws. Don't visit the parents. Do something you always wanted to do. I mean, to make it easy, if you put up a map on a wall and throw a dart at it, just buy a plane ticket and go to that place.
Wandering. I love wandering. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the more foreign the location, the better. Now, I read the 4-hour work week. And I was like, all right, you know, I told my girlfriend Jocelyn, I was like, listen, you know, we have all this time off. Why are we going to like Miami for a week and driving? Why don't we just go to Europe for a month? Let's just do it. Now, the reason why I picked Europe is because when I was in the Army, my first duty station was in Germany. I lived in Germany for 2 years. I absolutely love Europe. And, you know, in the service, just like any other 9-to-5, people take vacations and they want to go see family, visit family, whatever the case would be. Same thing in the service, you know, soldiers would take their leave for, you know, whatever, 30 days or whatever. And like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm just going to go home and visit my family. My friends and I, we would rent a car and we would drive to Spain. We would drive to Switzerland. We would drive to Paris. We would go see different parts of Germany. I mean, you're in like this beautiful continent. I mean, you know, try to see as much as possible.
And public transit there, you know, with the UK.
Super easy.
Set up. It's fantastic. So it makes getting around pretty easy.
Super, super easy. Yeah. Renting a car, taking a bus, taking transit. I mean, it was so easy. You know, I grew up as a skier, as an avid skier.
What's the best skiing in Europe, in your opinion?
Switzerland. Anywhere in Switzerland.
I felt like that was going to be the answer. I want to go there so bad in snow.
Yeah. Lake Lucerne, man. Go to Lake Lucerne. Not only is the skiing there phenomenal, the nightlife is just off the chain. I mean,
it's been I'm putting that one on the list. Absolutely.
Yeah. Lake Lucerne, Switzerland was phenomenal. Yeah, just skiing the Alps, you know, Germany, the Alps in Germany are awesome, but Switzerland was definitely.
I've heard it's the best favorite in the world. So it doesn't shock me that that was what you picked.
Right. So, I loved Europe, and I hadn't been back since my girlfriend and I took our first mini retirement. And we went to a couple of different areas. Now, to answer your question, setting it up financially. All right. So in the past, one of the things that we did was we both had used credit card reward points for buying airline tickets. So that's like that's the first hack, you want to call it, trick, tip, whatever the case may be. That's what we use. We use credit card reward points to buy airline tickets. And the first time we went was in 2018.
Is there a card, in your opinion, that you're using right now? Because obviously these things change over time. But as of 2023, is there a card that you've used for a while that you would recommend to people who are interested in travel?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are probably some cards better than the ones that I use, but the ones that I've been using since I would say 2017 is Chase Sapphire Reserve.
Okay.
And Chase Freedom Unlimited. So, and then you can combine points from both of those cards into, you know, into one pool, and then use those points to buy tickets. So if I were to buy the tickets using my points, then Jocelyn can transfer over whatever points that she has, you know, for her share of the tickets as well. This way we try to keep everything as even as possible.
And that's a good tip, because a lot of those things, like, I tend to recommend, if I'm giving blanket advice, I'm like, listen, I tell people, I'm like, just get cash back. Like, you know, just get a cash back card, whatever. But I will say this, if you are somebody and it's like, I love travel, this is a part of what I do, and I do it on a regular basis, or I'm planning big trips or whatever, one of the nice things is not just, you know, the point or reward system that comes with those, but it's the perks that come with those as well. You got to read up on all those perks, because I'm sure you could talk about it better than I could. It's like, there's a lot of things that are just as good as cash that are going to come with that, and make, you know, traveling just that much more of an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, definitely. Read the card member agreement and understand the reward program. I mean, it's just a big deal. And the reason why I think with Chase Sapphire Reserve was at the time they offered a massive, I think it was like 100,000 points if you spent X amount of money.
Oh yeah, sign on bonuses can be a huge plus.
Right. I don't think they offer that anymore. I'm not sure. But I mean, I've been happy with both of those cards. That, you know, for me, it's really no reason to change.
Okay. That's good to know.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, of course, if I dove a little deeper into it, I'm sure I could find a card that, you know, it may offer better benefits. But, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And, you know, yep, we're happy with it. So, so airline tickets.
You spend everything on the credit card throughout the year. You rack up those points
right in
anticipation of the trip. So what happens next?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So planning, you know, I guess the typical planning of a mini retirement. So I tell you specifically from this particular trip that's coming up. So, I mean, so basically what we do is we try to, you know, we know we want to go to Europe, and we know
how some far places have you plan this.
Probably, I think we started planning in March or April. So you want to do it maybe 4 to 6 months ahead of time.
Okay.
Really?
Good time.
Just to get an idea of what prices are like and whatnot, especially airfare.
Yeah.
And then there's some like flying. All right. So let me preface this by saying, like, the sky's the limit. You know, to anybody who wants to take a mini retirement, there's certainly places that are cheaper to go to than Europe. It's just
Asia or something.
Exactly. You know, South America, Ecuador, you know, you can get a beach in, you know, a hut on a beach in Nicaragua for pennies on the dollar, whatever the case may be. We just enjoy Europe because it's more of a way back, you know, a laid back way of life. The ease of travel, as you mentioned earlier, and, you know, the cuisine is just good, you know.
But I like the fact that you're not, again, this is your modus operandi, right? You're not letting money dictate what you're going to do on your time off. You're going where you want to go. So, you know, that's an interesting correlation. It's like, just like in your career, it's not money focused. Well, with your very precious vacations and or mini retirements, I mean, that you're looking forward to, you have, again, stuck to your guns and been like, I'm not going to go to the cheapest place just because my dollar will get further. I'm going to go where I'm going to have the most fun and the place that I know that I'm going to enjoy the most. So I love the fact that the philosophy there continues to be a part of every single aspect of this.
Yeah, right. And that, you know, it's not to say that I'll, you know, for every minute of retirement that I take, I'll always only go to Europe. I'm certain I'll explore different places.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but yeah, this is for us for now. This is, you know, like you said, our MO, you know. So when we start planning, and I think we did this each time, is we try to look for the cheapest place to fly into. Typically, it's Geneva, Paris, maybe Madrid, you know, but we try to figure out where we're flying into and then where we want to go. We both love Spain. We spent a month in Barcelona last summer, which was absolutely.
Oh, that ought to be nice.
It was really, really cool. And we were debating on whether we should go back to Spain, not, you know, maybe spend a week in Barcelona and maybe check out a different area. But we're watching YouTube videos about European cities. And two that really stuck out to us was the first was Budapest Budapest.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And Vienna. So we're like, you know what? Because we spent, you know, the first 2 minute retirements that we had, we spent a week in a different city, which is cool. You know, you're seeing, you know, you're going to, you know, four or five different cities, but you're losing a day of travel between each city, staying in hotels. By the time you get to a new city, you got to explore and figure out what you like to eat and, you know, cool places to
hang out. Are you like doing this true wanderer style? Are you like, listen, we're booking our ticket. We know where we're going to land. And then after that, we're figuring it out. Do you have the first like week of your mini vacation planned out? And then you just kind of see where the wind takes you. Like how much of it are you actually like is structured versus true wandering?
No, it's definitely not wandering, but I wouldn't say that it's too structured either. Okay. So, right. So we picked Vienna. So we'll go 2 weeks in Vienna and then we'll do 2 weeks in Budapest. And those are the two places that we're going to. Now, once we get there, no agenda at all. Maybe Got we'll it. Go see some okay. touristy stuff. Maybe we'll, you know, do it. We'll, you know, we'll take a day trip somewhere, whatever the case may be. But the whole idea behind it is just wake up and let the day develop organically. And some of the best like days some of the best days that I've had going on vacations, you know, in Europe are the days where we just woke up, we went out and we had breakfast, picked a direction. All right, we're just going to walk in this direction. We just walked in that direction. We saw a cafe or a bar that we like. We stopped, had a drink. Keep moving in that direction. Just let the day develop organically until, you know, we're ready to eat dinner or we're ready to come back to the accommodation that we're staying.
This I think is such an important point because in today's, this may be a little bit of a weird correlation, but I'm going to bring it together. You are giving the opportunity for space to happen. Right? You have created space versus packing in tour here, activity here, dinner at this place. And I think in life, you know, specifically in like first worlds and stuff like that, we don't know what it's like to have space anymore. We definitely don't know what it's like to be bored because the second that we're bored, what do? We just pick up our phones and we just plant ourselves in front of a screen. And they're talking about this even in children nowadays, you know, teachers. And I don't know if you're, you know, noticing this trend, but especially, you know, they're seeing it in, you know, younger children as they're just constantly watching like short form videos and different things and, you know, seeing all this stuff. They just don't get surprised anymore. They don't have the outbursts of like, you know, excitement. Everything's just a little more dull because there is a combination between that and then parents not letting them be bored. And I was talking about this with somebody the other day, and that's something I'm trying to be careful of in my parenting. I have three kids. And six and younger. And it's like, if I see them getting bored, or they come to me and they're like, Dad, I'm bored. I want to be like, okay, well, let's go do this. Let's color. Let's ride the bike. Let's pick an activity versus just saying, okay, go be bored. I used to be bored all the time back in the 90s, you know? Yeah. It's like, that's when your imagination sets in. That's what it's like. Not everything needs to be directed. We don't know what it's like in our life anymore to have space to just let things happen and see where they go from there. So I love that because I think in adult life, that is such an important thing. And it goes back again to you valuing time. You're not valuing activities and doing things necessarily. You're just evaluating space for your life. So I think that is a massive lesson that people could learn from because I totally agree with you. There's been a handful of I always tell people, I'm like, I have two types of vacations. I have vacations where I'm just relaxing, sitting around eating, space, you know, is planned and I will wander and talk to the locals, figure out the best places to eat. That's a vacation. Then I have adventures. And adventures is when I'm going somewhere and everything's pretty much planned. We're skiing 3 days a week. We're, you know, scuba diving off this coral reef. We've got the boat trip planned, yada, yada, whatever the case is. So it's like, I understand having the two differences. And some of the best days ever were when I was just at this place and didn't know what I was doing next. So I think for a lot of people listening, that's something that they really should try on their next vacation, whenever they're going somewhere. Even if you're like my wife and you're somebody who just needs an agenda for everything, one thing my wife is good at doing is we love to joke about this, but she plans her flex time.
Oh, really?
So she will actually in the agenda. We talk about this all the time. When we were dating, we had first met maybe been together for like a month or two. Her family's from Wisconsin. They came down to Florida. And one of the things she did, I go over to her apartment. We're talking about the weekend. And she gives me a written out agenda. And in the agenda is like flex time that is scheduled in. And I'm like, wow. I was like, you're so organized with your agenda. You put in flex time. This is amazing.
Interesting. So,
but yeah, I want to encourage people. Give it a shot. If you're that person who has to list everything out, schedule a day to just not do anything and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Just go outside, you know, go get yourself a good breakfast, you know, definitely start off with a good breakfast, coffee, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
Just so pick a direction.
I got a question. If my wife was right here, she'd be having a mini panic attack because she'd be like, oh my gosh, not having an agenda. I don't know what I'm going to do next after breakfast. Like, I don't know what to do. What is a functional piece of advice that you could give somebody who's like, I'm a planner, I can't do that? Like, what is it that you're looking for your next thing? You wake up in the morning, you eat breakfast. What are you looking for when you're trying to figure out just what to do next? Do you just literally pick a street, walk down it and find something interesting? Are you talking to locals for a cool spot? What do you do?
I mean, me personally, it's, you know, on those days that I mentioned earlier, it's just pretty much we pick a direction and just walk. So it's just my girlfriend and me. We're bonding. We're having a conversation. Like I said, we come across a cafe or a bar. Hey, this looks pretty cool. Let's have a seat, order a drink, order a beer, get a snack, whatever the case may be. Our bonding, you know, we're just continually bonding, continuing having that conversation, getting lost in conversation. You know, then we get up, we keep moving in the same direction. If we do come across like a museum or a restaurant, we can stop or we don't have to. And we, you know, find the next bar, the next cafe. You know, advice for someone who needs an agenda, I would say, I mean, you know, maybe plan out the first 4 or 5 hours of actually doing nothing and maybe just walking around to try to find places that you may want to, you know, that you may want to check out over the next couple of days, you know. But, you know, Jocelyn, my girlfriend, she'll have something completely different to say because she's more of like, I do want to see these touristy places. I do want to have a little bit more of a structure to the day. I'm more like, listen, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to do anything touristy. I want to be around people. I live in New York City, but we make it work. I mean, we find that happy medium.
That's good.
And, you know, and it works for both of us. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, if we do nothing, you know, there's going to be a day where we're going to do something that she wants to do. And if there's a day that she really wants to do something and something's really important for her, I'll go along with it because I know at the end of the day, we're going to go out to a phenomenal restaurant, have a great meal and a bottle of wine. And, you know, those are the memories that we're making together overall. So, yeah.
When you travel and you're doing this, what do you tend to value more? Do you value from an experiential perspective? Do you value, you know, like food and drinks? Do you value more like, you know, I can't think of anything right now, like excursions, like what type of thing do you like going to museums? Like what are some of your favorite things to do?
Yeah. I mean, so again, it's different between Jocelyn and I. So for me personally, it's more of just, you know, I love a good bar. I love, you know, just a good place to hang out, you know, cafe where I can maybe sit and read for a while. Parks are always good. Great long, you know, I really just enjoy getting to a place and going for a walk and discovering what's available to do. And then, you know, over the next couple of days, like, hey, do you remember we saw this restaurant? Why don't we go check this place out? Remember this bar that we saw the other day? Why don't we go check that place out? Or if we found a place that we really liked, hey, let's go back to this place because we enjoyed it some more, but let's try something a little bit different. Going to Vienna, I mean, something that I think I would want to do there is maybe see an opera what do you call it? An orchestra. You know, I think they're pretty good there. I've never been to anything like that before, but from what I understand, those are pretty awesome things to attend.
Absolutely.
I'm certainly open to that. I mean, you know, I live in New York City. I mean, there's Lincoln Center.
True.
It's just something that something that I'm not open to or something that it's not important to me, so to speak, but doing it in a place like Vienna is just, I'm sure it'll be a phenomenal experience, you know? And if not, then at least I tried it, you know?
I love it, man. I love being open to just whatever comes your way. So give me the credit card was good. I think this has been really exciting. With the last couple minutes we have left, give me some functional money-saving advice. You know, how do you kind of, you know, prepare financially for this trip? You said you start planning 4 to 6 months in advance. Obviously, if you want to do like excursions or something, it's like that can be a little difficult if you don't know exactly what they are because you're just showing up. So it's like if you don't have everything planned and you can't go, okay, helicopter trips over the jungle are, you know, $600 a person and this costs that much. How do you plan financially to make sure that you don't get there and then kind of run out of money halfway through because you're having such a good time?
Right. So that's a really good question. All right. So talked about airline tickets. So that's, you know, basically zero cost because it's on the credit card. So there's zero, like, you know, out of pocket costs right then and there. Last year we stayed at Airbnbs. Airbnbs are a great way to save money on food, in particular with breakfast and lunch. We always go out to dinner, but it's a great way to save food. You know, wake up in the morning, have a cup of coffee. The other reason why we like Airbnbs is the Airbnb that we stayed at in Barcelona had a balcony. So and being able to sit down in the balcony, have morning coffee or drinks in the evening, as opposed to actually going out and spending money at a bar, you can get a, you know, relatively.
So you're bringing in food or like ordering in. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Or buying a couple of bottles of wine, putting in the refrigerator.
Okay. Okay. I was wondering what you meant by you were saving food by staying in an Airbnb. So that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll definitely do, you know, we'll definitely go grocery shopping as opposed to going out for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
It makes sense because you're going to be there for 2-3 weeks. It's, you know, it's not like you're like just getting in and going. So it's like, yeah, I can make breakfast if I want to spend my money on a nicer dinner.
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, because when we first started, we were always staying in hotel rooms and it's difficult to do that, you know, so we're always buying breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we, you know, I'm sure that there are days where we will do that, but having the Airbnb gives you the option. It's always about having the option.
Okay. That's a good way to think about that.
Airbnbs may run a little bit more expensive than the hotels, I guess, depending on what you're looking for. So overall, our cost for an Airbnb for the month is about $2,800. So $1,400 for each city. However, they're very comfortable, a lot more open space, has the balcony, has the kitchen, has the coffee maker. And if it's like torrential downpour throughout the day, if we need to hang out in the Airbnb, we hang out in the Airbnb. Food, I never kept a budget with respect to daily expenses. This year, what I'm going to try is $50 a day for everything, excursions, whatever the case may be. Not that we're going to take a lot of excursions, but primarily food, because food can get expensive. You know, there's some places that are cheaper than others, some places that are more expensive. Anywhere outside of New York City, in my opinion, is always a bargain for me.
Yeah, no joke. Everybody from New York City and California has been moving to Florida, and they're like, I traded in my little 400 square foot apartment, and now I can buy a 2,500 square foot house down here in Florida. This is great.
Yeah. All right. So, and then what was the other? I'm trying to think. So, food, Airbnbs, you know, and transportation is relatively inexpensive in any European cities, you know. And if you don't take public transportation,
yeah, that's a really good point. Knowing where you're going locally, you're right. Transportation's cheap.
Right. So to prepare, you know, we use the credit card rewards points. You know, we're pretty, you know, like I said, we're both financially good with money. So we saved, you know, so I have, for me personally, I have a travel fund where that's all the spending money that I'll have once we actually get there.
And how do you do the travel fund? Are you this cash envelope person? Do you just have it automated in savings? Do you have a separate account that you manually put it in? How do you actually do that?
Yeah, it's a separate account that I actually have. And it's a separate account and high yield savings account, which is really
okay. It's a HISA. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Separate account that I will actually, with every paycheck, put anywhere from $50 to $200 into that particular account. And I do not touch it for anything. And, you know, I still have to transfer the money to my checking account now so I can use it during the trip. But I just keep it in there. Okay. Let the account, you know, generate interest and then that's it. But I'm pretty diligent about that, about, you know, shifting the money into there. Of course, if you automate it, it'd definitely be easier. But again, life happens. So you may have, you know, an expense that you may need the money for, which is why I try to range from $50 to $200 with every paycheck. I should say every month.
Every month.
$200. Okay. Yeah. At least $200 every month. So yeah, separate from that. And then, Yeah, I mean, just and then the same thing with the Airbnbs. Now, with the Airbnbs, what I do use is I have a separate credit card where I actually get through my investment brokerage account where any reservations I make on Airbnb, 2.5% of the final price of the Airbnb is reinvested into my brokerage account.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So again, we're playing the rewards game. I like this.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's 2.5% on $2,800. I mean, may not seem like a lot now, but again, that's money that I won't touch for, probably the next decade, so I'll let the compounding work.
Don't cheapen that. Okay. 2.5%. I tell people all the time, I'm like, what's the difference between 1% and 2%? And everybody's like, 1%. I'm like, wrong. It's 100%. Right. It's like when you think about everything in terms of percentages instead of amounts, it is a completely different wealth building experience. All of a sudden, you will look at the world differently. It's like, oh, okay, this gallon of milk was $4. Well, now it's $5. Okay, it didn't go up a dollar. It went up 25%. So it's like when you start looking at the world in terms of percentages, it just makes such a big difference. So the fact that you're looking at that, going, well, 2.5 percentage points is what I'm getting on this. Over, you take that, maybe you're just earning an extra percentage point or 1.5% off of a standard rewards that you would get with, like, a regular credit card or something. That 1.5% compounding over the next 20 years, that's going to be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, I don't touch that money. That's an investment account, and I probably won't for the next decade or so.
Okay. That's great.
But, I mean, yeah, but but it's just something that, makes me feel better, with spending the money. Plus, okay,
That's really important. That's great.
Right. And overall for both of us, for me personally, the overall expense for this particular month of, in Europe is going to come out to about $2,850. Okay. And, a lot of people may scoff at that. It's $3,000. You can do so much more with that money.
You can do a lot. Fine.
Exactly. But the thing, my personal opinion, my value is that one of the best investments that you can make is an investment in a life experience. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. Love it.
Especially somewhere outside of your comfort zone, an experience, a new place that's different than your current neighborhood.
I mean, I honestly think, $3,000 for a month, man, I think you're doing really good with that. I mean, I've spent $3,000 in a weekend on place, I mean, you can eat that up between playing flights and hotels for going somewhere for a weekend.
That's Disney World,
I was trying to get to, didn't work out this year, but I was trying to plan a trip to Breckenridge to go skiing earlier this year. It's going to be like $3,600. I mean, lift tickets alone were insane. They were like $750 for 3 days. So I think you're really doing a good job getting more bang for your buck, and looking at it that way, because you're like, well, some people may go $3,000. You could do a lot more with that. I'm sitting here going, wow, you could do a ton less than that. So I'm impressed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. And it's what I enjoy doing. It's what I like. And I can't wait to get out there and I encourage anyone, even if you haven't been to Europe, just go. I mean, it's not much different than the States. I mean, it's just a more laid back way of life. I mean, it's just, everything's calm. There's no rush to do things. I mean, people ride their bikes. People are friendly. Language barrier is virtually nil. And there's just so much to see and do and experience. And, I've never, ever had a bad experience with Europe.
Well, I love it, man. This has been so much fun just being able to talk about this. I love your mindset. I love the way that you, have grown up thinking differently, about what wealth is to you. And one of the things I love to tell people, Matt's not worth millions of dollars. Okay. And you are still out here living the life that you want, and you're happy and you're having a good time and you're enjoying things. You're working hard, but you're also enjoying things, and you're not waiting until you're 75 years old to start doing that. So that's a message I try to get across, because I tell people, one of the things that I teach is the importance of having a lifestyle strategy. The day and age of just, you go to work, you stay at the same job for 40 years, they take care of you, you have a pension, you know, and a decent retirement because you had company stock and they paid you a fair wage compared to living expenses, it's over. That's not the reality for people that are, you know, younger millennials, you know, Gen Z. We're not going to have that. Like, you know, the average housing expenditure is about 40% of people's income, and it should be about 30. Right. I just posted today, car payments are at an all-time high. I think it was something like the stat that I saw, it was like 8% of new cars are listed under $30,000. Compared to pre-pandemic, that was like 38%. So there's just been this drastic shift. And the crazy thing is people keep buying them. They don't go to the used car market, which, you know, there's still plenty of stuff out there as well. So it's just so important. It's like you can live the life that you want and you can enjoy it now. You just have to have a plan. You just have to be intentional about it. You can't just, you know, float through life because there's too many ways for companies to get your money. There's too many ways for you to just lose $100-$200 a month. And I mean, the amount of people that I've done hundreds, maybe thousands at this point of budget reviews in my lifetime with people. Mm-hmm. I have done people from making $500,000 a year all the way down to the ones making $30,000 a year. Never once have I not been able to find money that is being completely wasted that they weren't able to save. So, you know, it's one of those things that was one of the reasons I was excited to talk to you, because I was like, he's not going to come in here and be like, yeah, I make $1 million and I take a month off. It's like, nobody's going to listen to this podcast and be inspired by that. The fact that you're doing this on a teacher's salary, you're intentional, you have a plan and you're making it happen. And this isn't like the first time you've done it. You've done this for what, 10 years, you said?
No, this will be my fourth time. This is since 2018.
You've done this 4 years in a row. This is a scientific process for you at this point. You're not just getting lucky with it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and to your point, you know, before we end, how you were saying that, you know, a shift in mindset, whatever the case may be, the whole point of the mini retirement, you know, you call it a vacation, call it a mini retirement, what have you, the whole point of it. And this is in Tim Ferriss's book. It's really to re-examine your life. You know what I mean? To help you shift the mindset, to really figure out what it is that you want to do for the rest of your days, you know, because life's too short. Your life's entirely too short. You know, if you're unhappy with your job. Yeah. If you're unhappy with a job, try to find something better or start the side hustle, whatever the case may be. But it's really, the mini retirement is really to take that time for yourself and re-examine what's important to you so you can come up with a plan to do some of the things that you want to do before it's too late. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's good. That's good. I love that. Yeah. Taking some intentional time to just be with yourself in a situation where you're not under pressure.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, that's when a lot of people do start to think about it. It's like, okay, I just got fired from my job. Now what do I want to do? Well, that's not really it's hard to be honest with yourself about what you want to do when you can't pay rent next month.
Absolutely.
So your situation and frame of mind is going to be a lot healthier than somebody who's trying to figure that out then. What is one last, it can be about mini retirements, it can be about money in general, but what's a money tip in general that you would love to throw out to just everybody that's out there listening to this today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, I made a lot of mistakes. I spent a lot of money. I was, you know, just like most people, I would, you know, what started me off on a right path financially was tracking my expenses, like really seeing where I was spending my money. Mm-hmm. And if I was to give anybody advice, it would be start there, start tracking your expenses. And I've been doing it since January 1 of 2021. And that has been the biggest eye opener for me, is seeing how I'm spending my money. Because, you know, if I'm spending $500 going out to eat in New York City, I could spend half that, save the other half so I can finance my mini retirement, you know?
I couldn't say it any better. It's literally the first step. The godfather of process improvement once said, what gets measured gets improved. Well, guess what? What gets tracked, same thing, gets improved. The easiest thing the easiest and honestly, one of the first things you have to do if you want to start to build wealth and live the life you want is exactly what you just said. You have to know where you are. You have to track your expenses. Because guess what? If you don't control your money, somebody else is.
Absolutely.
It's just as simple as that. So I love what you said. I say this so much. I get sick of it because it still shows today. 70% of people still don't have a budget. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. Easiest thing. There's not anything that is any simpler that can cause a greater benefit than just having a stupid budget. If you don't like the word budget because you think it doesn't mean having fun anymore, then call it an intentional spending plan and intentionally spend on your fun. So I think it's great, man. I love it. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. I've loved the conversation and can't wait to see some. Are you going to be tweeting during the time? Are you going to send out some pictures of some places you're going to?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely do that. Yeah.
Okay, sure. Great. I'm going to be following along the journey and living vicariously through you. I'm getting a 5-day vacation. I'm in the middle of building something right now. So unfortunately, there's no month long vacations for me, but or mini retirements. But we're going to get about 4 days off here next week. So love to see where you're going, dude.